Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Please be seated. We have four cases on the calendar this morning. Two from the PTAB, one from the Veterans Court, and one from a district court. First case is Matt Therapeutics versus Ocular Therapeutics, 2020-2176.
Mr. Huang. Good morning. May it please the court. The central issue on this appeal is the lack of substantial evidence to support the board's obviousness determination in this case, for two specific issues. The first is a reason to select dexamethasone as the active ingredient in the challenged claims. And the second is a motivation or reason to combine the coloring agents from the Gillespie reference with the dexamethasone plug from the Pritchard reference. It's apparent from looking at the final written decision that there's insufficient evidence based on the portions of the record that the board cited. There's really only two pages from the final written decision that address these two specific issues, and the cited portions of the petition, and the two expert declarations that the petitioner, Ocular, submitted in this case, show that there's a lack of substantial evidence on those issues.
Well, counsel, Pritchard mentions dexamethasone specifically, and so what's so obscure about that? Putting a well-known anti-inflammatory in the eye seems pretty obvious.
Well, Judge Lurie, there's several reasons why, even though there's a literal disclosure of dexamethasone in the Pritchard reference, that's not enough evidence to show that there would be a reason to choose that drug out of all the hundreds that are shown in the art. First of all, we can go straight to the Pritchard reference. Pritchard doesn't really teach the selection of dexamethasone specifically. And as we explained in the briefs, a person of ordinary skill has to go through a very complicated chain of incorporation by reference to even find dexamethasone in the reference.
Aren't you confusing written description concepts with obviousness concepts? I mean, with respect, I understand we've got blaze marks and it says if there's a whole bunch of things, you can't just say that one is disclosed. But when you're talking about obviousness, it's in there and you don't have to have the same kind of emphasis on what's disclosed.
Well, respectfully, Judge O'Malley, I believe the law still says that there still has to be a reason to choose the active ingredient, especially when there's a large number of that are disclosed in a particular reference. It is in the same reference within Pritchard, technically, through the incorporation by reference. So it is all within a single reference. But there still has to be a reason under this court's precedence to choose that particular ingredient. For example, the impacts case, there's a prior art reference where there are 25 different examples and categories of drugs that are disclosed. But the court still said that's insufficient to show why that particular active ingredient, zolmitriptan in that case, would have been chosen by a person of ordinary skill.
But isn't dexamethasone, wasn't it well known at the time for use with respect to pain, post-surgical, for instance?
It was a known anti-inflammatory and a known corticosteroid. So it was known for treating pain, that's correct. But one point about Pritchard, for example, is that if you look at the totality of the disclosure, it's not really about treating that particular indication. The 368 provisional by itself is about chelation-resistant materials for implantation in a patient. It's not specific to punctal plugs, for example. So there's no reason a person, even looking at the 700 examples of drugs and the 130 categories of drugs in those two separate lists, would have seized upon that particular reference. Pritchard itself, the published application, is primarily about treating dry eye, not really about treating pain or inflammation. So an anti-inflammatory like dexamethasone doesn't naturally lend itself to a person of ordinary skill when they're trying to find an active ingredient for the claimed invention.
Well, you say Pritchard is primarily about dry eye, but it also references post-surgical uses, right?
That's correct. And in some of the claims, so I think, for example, claim 77 of the published application, there's a reference to some of those other indications. And those are cited in other grounds or for other claims, I should say for other claims, by the board and by the petitioner in this case. But it is primarily about treating dry eye. If you look at, I think, the initial parts of the specification of Pritchard, it talks mostly about treating dry eye. And so that's where the indication to use dexamethasone is not really indicated by Pritchard.
What about the Gillespie reference?
Well, so then it gets to the issue about motivation to combine the coloring agents in that reference, the Gillespie reference, even if you have a dexamethasone plug that's disclosed by Pritchard. And there's still insufficient evidence to show a reason to combine in that particular case.
But that's a factual finding that the board made. I mean, they cited Dr. Lohmann's testimony and actually found that there was a motivation to combine. That's a tough road for you to climb in terms of convincing us that factual finding was not supported by substantial evidence.
Well, that's right, Judge O'Malley. It is a factual finding. The standard of review is, of course, substantial evidence. But it's met in this case based on what the board cites about Dr. Lohmann's testimony in this case. So if you look at that portion of the final written decision, and that's really just the bottom of page 62 to 63 that talks about the motivation to combine, choosing colors and adding them to dexamethasone, there it really only cites three parts of Dr. Lohmann's declaration. The first is paragraph 89, and that's at appendix 2898. And there Dr. Lohmann simply says that dexamethasone and other therapeutic agents are generically available. So he's done no more than what was in the petition in Dr. Dana, the first expert's declaration, simply saying that dexamethasone is known as an anti-inflammatory. Then on motivation to combine, the board cites paragraphs 92 and 93 of Dr. Lohmann's declaration, and that's at appendix 2899. And there all he says is that a formulator whose experience could add color, just generally coloring agents, to a known drug delivery device. It's not specific to dexamethasone. It's not specific to functional plugs. And at most, it says could, right? A person of ordinary skill could take coloring agents in general, add them to a plug that has a drug in it. And this court has said repeatedly that that's not enough to establish a reason to combine. For example, the InTouch versus Vigo case, it says there's a difference between would, what a POSA would do, and what's possible. So even if everything Dr. Lohmann says is correct, that's all the board relies on, and that's simply legally insufficient to establish motivation to combine in this case. It's just a statement about possibility.
Do I remember correctly that the claims aren't limited to any particular treatment, that really it's directed to more of the device? Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. Yes, the preamble of the claim is a drug delivery device. Yes, that's correct. That's correct. So to finish that thought, again, there's just insubstantial evidence, even on the motivation to combine, and that's why, to Judge O'Malley's question, there's still a lack of substantial evidence to support that aspect of the obviousness determination.
Well, substantial evidence, of course, is not a preponderance. It's some reasonable amount of evidence. There is some evidence here.
Well, yes, that's correct, Judge Lurie. It doesn't have to be a preponderance, and there is some evidence. But as looking at those specific portions of the Lohmann Declaration say, that's legally insufficient. There is some evidence, but it doesn't go to the legal question of a reason to combine, a motivation to combine. At most, that's a could. And again, like that's similar to the InTouch case where the court says, when an expert just says there's puzzle pieces, the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle, you try to put them together, it's possible to put them together. That's still not enough to show a reason to combine the particular pieces of an invention. So that evidence that's cited, those three paragraphs, are still legally insufficient to get to where the board wanted to go when it came to obviousness in this particular case. So another point about those portions of the Lohmann Declaration is that it's inconsistent with the way the board dealt with the handbook reference, which was used for a different ground. So the petitioner had tried to use this handbook reference, which lists a number of different coloring agents in connection with pharmaceuticals, as a substitute for the Gillespie reference. And the board said that was insufficient to establish obviousness because there's no indication that using the coloring agents from the handbook reference could be done with the plug from Pritchard. But somehow when Dr. Lohmann says essentially the same thing, that there's a large number of coloring agents and it's possible to use them with different active ingredients, that's enough for obviousness. That's inconsistent. And arguably Dr. Lohmann's opinion is actually less specific because it doesn't provide the kinds of examples that the handbook reference does.
But doesn't Gillespie itself provide the motivation for having color in these plugs?
Well, I'd say no for these two reasons. One is that Gillespie doesn't talk about using therapeutic agents. So it doesn't talk about using active ingredients, and certainly for that reason it doesn't talk about using dexamethasone, that's in the challenge claims. And the second thing is, if you look at that portion of the board's opinion that we were just discussing, 62 to 63, I believe there's no discussion there of Gillespie supplying that that motivation. They rely exclusively on what Dr. Lohman says. He's not an ophthalmologist. He's not a person of skill in the art. And again, those cited portions, taking the board at its word, don't support the legal conclusion that it's trying to reach in terms of obviousness.
So is it? So what you're asking is that we send it back for the board to explain itself better?
Well, no, we'd ask for a reversal because, as this court has said before, I mean, the evidence is in the record, what the experts said, what the petition said, and what the references said. And it's just legally insufficient to establish a reason to choose dexamethasone and then also the motivation to combine in this particular case. The board's done that, I mean, this court has done that before. TQ Delta versus Cisco, one of the cases we cited, has a similar posture where the board reversed on obviousness, partly because of a conclusory expert opinion about motivation to combine. So, so there's no need for the board to explain itself. The evidence is in, and there's no indication that you could establish obviousness as a matter of law in this particular case. So I want to go back to the issue about choosing dexamethasone and the evidence that's cited for that. So that portion of the final written decision is Appendix 62, page 62 of the opinion. And then the paragraph at the top of the page, the board really just relies on attorney argument from the petition, and then also paragraph 65 of Dr. Dana's declaration, which is Appendix 1465. And the statement there is just, quote, dexamethasone is an anti-inflammatory and can be used to treat pain and discomfort. That's it. That's all that's cited there. So it's a conclusory opinion because there isn't really reasoning behind that. And second, it's a generic statement.
Why is that conclusory? If Dr. Dana, who was a person of ordinary skill in the art, right, an ophthalmologist,
yes,
says that it's an anti-inflammatory and can be used to treat pain and discomfort, and that's one particular treatment for eyes, then why wouldn't that be sufficient under a substantial evidence standard?
Well, it's just a statement that the drug is known and that it has certain properties as anti-inflammatory. It doesn't say why you'd want to necessarily use it in connection with the claimed invention. And as we discussed earlier,
I would presume it's because you want to treat pain and discomfort, which is the express reason provided. Why isn't that enough?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is that Pritchard, again, is primarily about treating dry eye. It's not really about treating pain or inflammation, which is what dexamethasone is for. And then second, there's a large number of anti-inflammatories.
So we're supposed to look at Pritchard and say that that device in Pritchard is only for treating dry eye.
I wouldn't say it's only for that purpose, but it is the primary purpose that's discussed. And so looking at the reference as a whole, as a person of ordinary skill has to, that's the conclusion they would get, particularly given the chain of incorporation by reference and the huge number of drugs that are in those laundry lists. But to finish the answer to your question, the other thing is that there's a large number of anti-inflammatories. I mean, for example, you know, acetaminophen, Tylenol, it's an anti-inflammatory. But that fact by itself doesn't mean that I have a reason to stick it into my eye and add a coloring agent to it. There has to be something more than that, and as the cases say, to get to the point where you have a reason to choose that particular drug, particularly given just how many are disclosed in the Pritchard reference.
So you're into your rebuttal, and you wanted to save some time?
Yes, thank you. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Right. Thank you.
Counsel, could you pronounce your name for us?
Yes, Your Honor, I'd be happy to. It's Sweezy.
Sweezy. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'd like to address the substantial evidence that supports the Board's decision, and I would like to start with a few background principles. Number one, why this case is different than impacts, the evidence will show. Number two, why there were not only two pages in the Board's final written decision that support its determination that claims 5, 14, and 20 were obvious. And all of the background principles that we use in evaluating obviousness, which is that the person of ordinary skill in the art looks at the reference for all that it teaches, and of course is a creative, practical person. So with all of those principles in mind and the point that this is a fact-specific question, let me sort of both step back and jump into the evidence that supports the Board's decision. And I'd really like to make two overarching points here. The Board made numerous findings leading up to its determination that claims 5, 14, and 20 would have been obvious. And much of this was uncontroverted by Maddie. So first, the first of the two points, the Board made determinations that the Pritchard reference taught a variety of categories of drugs, a breadth of categories. And this is a case where The large number certainly doesn't suggest non-obviousness, but it suggests obviousness. And the board made that finding, that's at Appendix 58, and noted that Maddie did not contest these teachings in Pritchard across this breadth of categories. The second
what
point-
about the fact that, as your friend on the other side points out, I mean, even from the starting point, you have to go back to the incorporated reference to even find dexamethasone.
Judge O'Malley, it is not the situation that there's any sort of web or complexity here under this court's case law. As a legal matter, the Pritchard 368 provisional is incorporated in full in the Pritchard reference. This is in the Pace versus Ford Motor case. And that is treated as a singular document, one cohesive, unitary document. So there's no sort of digging or complication. The person of ordinary skill in the art would not be lost. That document is incorporated in reference in full, and it discloses drugs. Pritchard itself is not solely about non-drug delivery ocular devices, but also repeatedly refers to ophthalmic drugs to be used. That's at Appendix 800. Also has a section at Appendix 801 that says this drug device may further comprise a therapeutic agent. And so we treat Pritchard and Pritchard 368 as one singular document.
Can you explain how the 368 provisional provides 112 support for Pritchard?
Your Honor, I might answer that this way. It is the more disclosure than the 082 has for its claim to dexamethasone. So it doesn't do any less than the 082 patent in terms of providing support for choosing dexamethasone. And we have both the board's findings that these broad categories, including anti-inflammatories and corticosteroids, would have been obvious. And you also have the board's findings that Pritchard teaches a variety of conditions. Both of those were essentially uncontroverted by Maddie at Appendix 58 and 59. All of those background findings and extensive findings are more than when the board finally gets to the coda. Claims 5, 14, and 20, and the fact that it recites one specific pharmaceutical agent that is expressly recited in the Pritchard 368 provisional, which is incorporated into Pritchard. This isn't any inventive leap to selecting one of the particular ingredients that is expressly recited on the face of Pritchard 368. And that makes this case different than ones where you might have to modify or extrapolate or to take an inference from, it is expressly recited there. And the board made that determination that it would have been obvious to choose that within the category of anti-inflammatories and corticosteroids, which were obvious choices. Given Pritchard's disclosures, that was really all we needed, but we did put forth expert testimony, which was not conclusory, just because an expert is succinct and brief, and in a well-known, mature field, as the board found, nothing more is required. The board credited our expert and credited the person of ordinary skill in the arts reading of Pritchard, incorporating Pritchard 368.
But putting aside whether it's actually incorporated, because there's no dispute over that, but I'm trying to talk about the 112 issue, the dynamic drinkware case or line of cases. Was that not an issue at all?
That was not an issue. And what I would say, Judge O'Malley, is that, again, going back to the point that the person of ordinary skill in the art looks at a reference for all that it teaches. Pritchard teaches ocular devices. It specifically says that its devices can use a drug delivery agent. It teaches the types of materials, the hydrogel materials that the 082 patent claims, and it incorporates by reference the Pritchard 368. And the Pritchard 368 lists the specific drug that, again, sort of down these chain of findings that is recited in Claims 5, 14, and 20. So I think Maddie is sort of trying to treat Pritchard and Pritchard 368 as entirely unrelated and independent. Even if that were the case, it's in the art, but it actually isn't an accurate way to look at the art. Pritchard and Pritchard 368 are together. They are one document. And so the only question then is, would a person of ordinary skill in the art been motivated to add color, which is the other limitation? And the board, again, had substantial evidence to support its determination that, yes, this was a mature art. The board said specifically that the maturity of the art included all of these different elements, materials, hydrogels, and color with a drug delivery agent. And that's at the board's decision at Appendix 40 to 42.
So what about the fact that the board was not exactly chatty when it came to the issue of Gillespie, all right? It is a very short and succinct statement that you would just do color. You would just add color.
Your Honor, I don't think there's anything wrong. We should probably welcome succinct and efficient descriptions. There's certainly no legal error in being succinct and concise. But I would also point out that the determination that the board made at pages 62 to 63 that Maddie's counsel referenced, again, follows its determination of the combination of Pritchard and Gillespie, which is at appendix 40 to 42, and talks about why a person of ordinary skill would have been motivated to combine those two references. So it is more than what is at 62 to 63. It's not, I don't think brevity should be faulted here at all, but I did want to point to the other findings in the final written decision.
Do you disagree with his characterization that really all the board said is, or all Dr. Lohman said was that someone could do this as opposed to someone would be motivated to do this?
Dr. Dana's testimony and the references themselves, and of course the board is an expert body and can look at the references themselves, and the board made a determination, a factual determination, that a person of ordinary skill in the art looking at these two references would have been motivated on the face of Gillespie alone. Gillespie says these are small devices. It would be a good idea to color them. It would be an improvement on the art, and that is substantial evidence that supports the determination by the board.
And where did the board make that finding?
That finding is at appendix 40 to 41, that the combination of Gillespie and Pritchard, Gillespie provides an advantage to color punctal plugs, and it credits our expert, Dr. Dana, which his opinion is at appendix 1468 to 1471.
Would you say that Gillespie itself is almost an anticipation if it had disclosed dexamethasone? After all, it was a punctal plug, and it disclosed coloration.
That might be. We did offer Pritchard as an anticipatory reference, but it also might be. But all the court has before it is the obvious determination, and certainly with the way a person of ordinary skill in the art would read the evidence, the decision is supported. And I would just, on the number of drugs, I think that is, Maddie has made an argument in its brief that there's some sort of legal rule or one way to look at the number of items that might be listed. Of course, that's not the case. That is not what IMPACTS held. IMPACTS relied on additional findings such as that particular drug was unique and it would have been counterintuitive. In this art, where it was mature and dexamethasone, as Maddie itself and its expert conceded, were known to be used as anti-inflammatories, we're not in the IMPACT situation. We have mature, well-developed science that it would have been obvious to select dexamethasone out of the categories that Maddie conceded were disclosed at Pritchard. If the court has no further questions, we will rest on our brief.
Thank you, Ms. Sweezy. Mr. Huang has a couple of minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I first want to address the incorporation by reference arguments that were just made, and then go back to motivation to combine. So an incorporation by reference, as the panel observed, it's not disputed that there is a quote-unquote singular document, that as a legal and technical issue, the 368 provisional is in there. At the end of the day, the question that matters, of course, is what the person of ordinary skill sees when looking at the reference as a whole. And as we explained, there's a complicated chain here that includes four different provisionals that are incorporated by reference. And even when you get to the section of Pritchard that talks about drug and therapeutic agent delivery, the part that talks about active ingredients, it cites a different provisional, the 132, not the 368 that actually has dexamethasone in there. And then the examples that are given in the Pritchard application itself are silver and triclosan, which are antimicrobials and are not really related to dexamethasone at all. So a person of ordinary skill, yes, would find that that reference is literally in there. If you go and look at the 8 pages of the 368 provisional that lists all those hundreds of different categories and examples of drugs, it is literally listed there. But they would have to go through a lot to find it, and there's no indication to choose that particular drug out of all the ones there. And in that sense, it is like impacts in that there's a large number to choose from and that there has to be a reason to pick that particular one. Or like the Leo Pharmaceuticals case where there are two active ingredients there and then there are a number of choices, I think 8 of one and 10 of another, from which a person of ordinary skill has to choose. So, although it is one document, and maybe the incorporation by references is legally and technically correct, APOSA is not going to seize upon dexamethasone as the choice for use with a punctal plug and with the coloring agents of Gillespie. And then second, briefly, in the remaining time, on motivation to combine. So again, Gillespie does talk about using different coloring agents, but when we look at the specific claims, 5, 14, and 20, we're talking not just about a plug in general, but a plug that has dexamethasone. And again, Gillespie doesn't talk about therapeutic agents. And if you look at what the experts say and what the board says, it's not just that it's succinct, it's that it's legally insufficient. There's no why or would that shows why the person of ordinary skill is going to do that. It's just that it's possible.
But that's, even if that's true within those two pages, your friend on the other side just pointed out that there were numerous other pages in which the board expressly discussed why there would be a motivation.
Yes, and if I may, two quick points to that. One is that those two pages are about the dexamethasone claims, which is what's relevant to this appeal. And so even though there's some motivation to use color with plugs in general, the question is whether or not there's motivation to use those coloring agents with a dexamethasone plug, even if you arrive at that from reading Pritchard. And when you look at that and what the board said about that, that's legally insufficient for obviousness. If there are no further questions, we'll respectfully request reversal.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate both arguments. We'll take the case under submission.